Welcome once more, folks, and I'm going to call on Ross to our Director of Athletics to have our invocation, please.
Thank you, Jim. Please bow our heads. Dear Lord, you the one from whom on different paths all of us have come, to whom on different paths all of us are going, make our hearts strong so that we may be united in our efforts and build bridges across all that divide us. As one, make us rejoice in our diversity and allow us to witness your peace in the full spectrum of your glory. Also on this special day, please provide guidance over the Ransdale family and our leadership team as we honor Dr. Ransdale in a most special way. Provide us with your wisdom and glory the rest of today and beyond. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
Thank you, Ross. Porter, if you'll have the roll call, please, sir.
Yes, sir. Mr. Dennison?
Here.
Ms. Haskins?
Here.
Mr. Higdon?
Here.
Mr. Jesse?
Here.
Mr. Johnson?
Here.
Mr. Kennedy?
Here.
Mr. Meyer?
Here.
Dr. Mentor?
Here.
Mr. Wilkie? Mr. Zilke?
Here.
Thank you, sir. I would entertain a motion to approve the minutes of the January 21st, 2011 first quarterly meeting.
Mr. Chair, I have,
yes,
one,
ma'am?
I have one correction.
Okay.
On page 9, under the paragraph at the top beginning 34% of academic affairs carry forward, Honors International Programs Building. We discussed that at the last board meeting, and Ms. Mead had said that that was erroneously in there. So that needs to be struck.
We'll make that correction and bring
okay.
it to the next.
All right. If that correction would be made. Are there any other comments on the minutes of the January 21 meeting or any other corrections?
Motion to approve with the noted correction.
Second.
All right. Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you very much. Let's move forward then. We've got a big day, and it's a great day. I want to say that right now, and it's a great day for us and for Western and for Dr. Ransdale. So let's move forward, and I'm going to call on Ms. Haskins for the Academic Affairs.
Mr. Chair, if I could.
Oh, excuse me. I apologize.
Okay, before we move into our agenda and our committee reports, I would like to do two things that will go in the official minutes of this board. First, I want to acknowledge the passing of Darrell Downing since we last met as a board, our fourth president, and as I said to many during the days that led to his funeral, in my mind, that was the closing of an era for this university and for higher education in Kentucky. He was the fourth of four presidents that served us for our first 73 years. Pretty amazing when you think about higher education and the unique traditions that we've built. So I do want to acknowledge our tribute to Darrell Downing and his passing. Actually, 3 weeks ago today was his funeral. And then going forward, I want to acknowledge Billy Stevens' election as our next regent and student body president. And we will swear Billy in at our June called budget meeting as Colton will be moving on in his professional career in June. But you all have Billy's resume. I sent that to you just recently, and he's an impressive young man. You will enjoy getting to know him, majoring in international affairs. With a minor in international business and political science, intends to go to law school. A superb leader and scholar on our campus, and I want to acknowledge his election by our students as our student body president and student regent.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll move now to the academic affairs, Ms. Haskins.
Thank you. The academic affairs have quite a few items today, and we're going to try to maybe lump some of them together. And we're going to do action item 1.1, and 1.2 together. No, Dr. Inslee.
1.1 and 1.2 refer to two new degree types at Western Kentucky University. Full degree program proposals will be presented in due course. The first type, Doctor of Physical Therapy degree, which would be WKU's third practice-oriented professional doctorate degree. And summary information on this program, or type rather, is included in pages 1 through 5 of your booklet. The second degree type is a Master of Arts in Teaching, an MAT degree type, leading to initial certification at the graduate level. Dr. John Bonaguro, Dean of the College of Health and Human Services, and Dr. Sam Evans, Dean of the College of Education and Behavioral Sciences, are here to address any questions you may have on these two new degree types.
Does the Master of Arts in Teaching then make somebody a rank one in Kentucky jargon education?
Would make them a rank two.
A rank two.
Yes, sir.
What? How do you get to be a rank one? Just hours?
That would be either 30 hours. Well, in this case, it won't be 30 hours. A rank one for folks who graduate from this program would be a total of 60 hours, including the MAT, and that would be work as a graduate.
I move approval.
Second.
Up there, not any other questions, and all in favor?
Aye.
Of both. It's 1.1 and 1.2. Those opposed, the motion carries. And we'll move on to action item 1.3 through 1.6.
Thank you, Regent Haskins. Action items 1.3 through 1.6 refer to proposed new degree programs. And the first is a Master of Arts in Social Responsibility and Sustainable Communities, integrating the concepts of sustainability and social responsibility and justice. Dr. Dennis George, Dean of the University College, is here to address any questions you may have on that. Action item 1.4 refers to a Bachelor of Science in Mathematical Economics, a university program which crosses two colleges, the Ogden College of Science and Engineering and the Gordon Ford College of Business. Dr. Bruce Kessler from Ogden and Dr. Michelle Travick, the Department Head of Economics, are here to address any questions you may have on that. 1.5 and 1.6 are two new undergraduate certificates, one in computer literacy, to prepare students for, you know, day-to-day life in the 21st century, where computer literacy is so important, and a certificate in information systems, preparing students for entry-level positions in the computer area. And Dr. Dennis George is here to answer any questions you may have on these.
Are there any questions or comments? If not, we'll ask for the motion.
Move approval.
Second.
We'll have a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries as well. Now we'll do action item 1.7 and 1.8.
This is 1.7, 1.8 refer to some reorganization within academic affairs, research, and in particular within the university college. If you recall from the committee meeting, this chart was discussed at some length. This is the academic affairs part of it. It defines the academic affairs executive team, a collection of associate vice presidents with various responsibilities in academic affairs. The three positions highlighted in yellow are retitling from assistant vice president to associate vice president. No change in compensation is involved. And Dr. Richard Miller, who is here and serves both as chief diversity officer for the institution, but also we're proposing as vice provost a change in title from associate vice president for academic affairs and representing the office of the provost in my absence. These are the four action items for the board. On chart B, which is the next one, I believe, Jeff. There is one action item for the board, the appointment, we're retitling essentially Mr. Doug Rohrer's position to Associate VP for Research and Development. Within the University College, as we discussed earlier, there was a movement of the Commonwealth School, previously Bowling Green Community College, into the university college, which created a somewhat awkward hierarchy for faculty personnel issues, in as much as they go from faculty through a department head to a dean. And by going from department head to a Commonwealth school director to a dean, it put those faculty in the position of having one extra level of review, and therefore the proposal is to remove the Commonwealth school as an administrative entity to make the divisions in the Commonwealth school departments within the university college reporting directly to the dean. And this is a revised chart showing that. We still keep the term Commonwealth School as indicated by the dashed line running the blocks at the bottom to indicate that, you know, these departments are the departments that offer the previously courses associated with the Commonwealth School or the community college, the so-called C courses. And I will be happy to answer any questions, as will Dr. Bayless, Dean for Research, and Dean George.
A couple of questions. On item 1.7, said that there would be none of these title changes would involve a change in salary. Does that mean only for this year or going forward?
There has been no salary change process. They are, of course, eligible for any raises that may occur
right.
in due course, but
right.
there is no proposal or plan for any salary adjustment associated with these titles.
Okay, great. Thank you. I had a question about the org chart under University College. I just noticed one thing different from what was presented at the committee meetings. University Experience is now getting moved under Department of Academic Support. Is that correct?
Dennis?
Yes, University Experience, there has been a South Campus component of University Experience.
Okay, and it's been under Chin-Chin, yeah.
The University mm-hmm. Experience on this campus is still under Chin-Chin. There has been historically a University Experience component at South Campus taught
okay.
to the students.
Okay, so that just refers to that little piece of the puzzle.
That little piece, absolutely.
And the quote-unquote main campus piece of the puzzle is still
under
Dr. King.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, just checking. Thanks.
Any other questions? Ready for the motion?
Move approval of these two action items.
Second.
Okay. We've had a motion, and it has been seconded. Are there any, all in favor? Let's go there.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. And we're going to do action item 1.9, the emeritus faculty appointments.
Action 1.9 is a proposal to award Dr. Riley, emeritus professor of chemistry. We have one individual being proposed for an emeritus faculty appointment at this point.
Move for approval.
Second.
What does the emeritus position get other than that title?
Title.
Is that it?
Very much.
It's a prize package.
You get to come to a very nice reception every year.
Okay.
But also, it's exactly, if emeritus faculty choose to teach, their pay scale is significantly different than it would be otherwise. You know, if we get to hire someone as an adjunct or a part-time faculty member, there's a stipend or pay scale for that. As emeritus faculty, the compensation is slightly greater.
How many do we have? Is this a big group?
Oh, I'm sure by this point it's very large.
I would say that it's hundreds at this point over time. Normally, over the course of a given year, we'll induct
20,
over
30.
Four board meetings, 15 or 20.
Mm-hmm.
Over the course of a given year, and so of our retired faculty, I don't want to hazard a guess in terms of how many of our retired faculty are of emeritus status, but you know, an important portion of them are.
Okay, I believe it was 300 or 400 invitations we sent to the recent emeritus faculty.
Is there a plaque or something that designates that's kept in Duck or somewhere that has the emeritus people all enumerated and listed for posterity purposes?
I don't know that we have anything formal like that.
Could we do that?
They are in the university catalog.
Well, a catalog, but I'm talking about something more than
some
a catalog.
Some of us read it. But
and wouldn't that be appropriate to consider?
It'd be quite large.
Well, you'd add to it every well.
Yeah.
Gold.
Well, we'll give some thought how best to physically recognize emeriti faculty.
Right. Thank you for the discussion. Now we're ready for the motion.
I think she moved it already.
Oh, we already did that? Okay. All right. Oh, yeah. We did it the opposite way. Okay. So we've already done everything for that.
We got to take a vote.
Did we vote?
No.
Oh, okay. Then all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
And those opposed? And the motion carries. Okay, now we'll do action item 1.10.
The remaining action item is a proposal to award honorary doctor of public service degrees to two very distinguished individuals, Ms. Elaine Chow, Secretary of Labor under President Bush and currently a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and also Dr. Zhu Lin, who is responsible for several hundred Confucius Institutes through Hanban. And one of those Confucius Institutes is, of course, right here, and is serving the needs not only of the university but also the community by placing Chinese individuals in our grade schools and our high schools to educate students in Chinese language and culture. This proposal was reviewed by the Honorary Doctorate Awards Committee, Faculty Staff Committee, and they have recommended that the Honorary Doctor of Public Service degree be awarded to these two distinguished individuals at the next appropriate occasion. And President Ransdell may wish to add a few words at this point.
Both are distinguished individuals in government service. And most of you know Elaine Chao as a former Secretary of Labor in the Bush administration, but she also directed the Peace Corps and is President and CEO of the United Way of America. And currently a distinguished fellow at the Heritage Foundation in Washington, and high demand across the globe in terms of a speaker, and then Madam Zhu Lin is one of the top 30 government officials for the People's Republic of China, a high-ranking official in the Education Ministry, and the Confucius Institutes in China is the Chinese government's way, like we have USAID or the Peace Corps, or other government agencies that extend our nation's heritage across the world. The Chinese government has selected the Confucius Institutes on college and university campuses as their means of outreach and major influence across the globe. And she is the CEO, in our language, of Hanban, which is the entity that presides over the Confucius Institute. So it's she has accepted, and she's given lots of opportunities to do this with 322 Confucius Institutes across the globe. She has accepted this honor from us, we will bestow both of these honorary degrees at our President's Circle Gala on May 20. And that will be a wonderful moment for us. Now, Madam Zhu Lin is very busy, and she's agreed to accept, but her travel is tenuous at best, given the demands on her time and schedule. But she will either be at the gala, or we will find another occasion to do it. Secretary Chow has accepted and agreed to be here on May 20.
So moved on the motion.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries, and we will honor those two distinguished ladies. Okay. The next thing that we have are informational items, and the first one is an enrollment report from Dale Brown.
Ms. Neskins, I'd like to invite Mr. Dale Brown, if you know well, as our interim associate VP of enrollment management, to present the report.
Morning. You will soon have a report coming around to you. The bottom line number, I'd like to explain quickly. The number you see there is less than a negative. If you look at the academy students have not been registered yet, so they're that number will change, and also the high school number. We had a number of students last year from one high school to enroll for some summer classes, and at this time they have not. So you add those two numbers, it takes the other number down significantly. Then if you'll look in the continuing column, students who've not had to register yet from the freshman level to 187, so we expect change there with the deadline for registration. What we are seeing right now, we have received more applications at this point than we had basically for the year last year. And we've gone back over the past 3 years and been consistent with a yield of about 44%, right at 44% of the number of total applications. If indeed that holds out, that will throw us up in the 300 range. But numbers not included in that, this past Tuesday we were able to go to Boyle County, and Boyle County has 142 individual students signed up for the high school numbers, the dual credit for next school year, and we expect that could possibly climb as high as 200 for fall. They have staff there at the high school approved. WKU staff, those numbers are really going to help us out also. And then there's another high school we've not been able to work with in the past due to hadn't reached out and they didn't come to us. So we feel like numbers are going to improve significantly. It's really preliminary from the standpoint of what you have here to think about the fall and to guesstimate. But we're looking at trend lines and what we've observed in the past. Something else that enrollment management, we plan to be in each of the high schools in the city and county over the next 3 weeks, speaking to sophomore students about completing, about finishing their final 2 years and making sure it's college prep, technical education ready. We will be meeting in groups of 30 or 30 to 45 minutes with each group, and then in the evening we will have a session for the parents for them to come in and to ask questions. In addition to that, we've been invited to speak at freshman orientation, which is an ideal time because all the parents are there and the students. So we think this might be a pretty decent pilot.
So these are students actually enrolled and your academic transitions program, which is where students actually register for classes. We've now conducted 6 of 18, or am I correct? Or we've conducted about a third of the number of the ATP programs that are scheduled between now and midsummer.
Yes, and those numbers at this point are up about 200 compared to the same date last year.
The program that you're doing in the high schools, which I think sounds fantastic, is that our attempt to make the high school preparation component of Senate Bill 1 reality? Because we all know there's the divorce between the intent and the reality. But is this our intervention tactic?
That will do that, but that was not our point.
Okay.
That was not. This is just something coming from the P-12 side feeling like these are some things maybe we can do to get in their desk or on their desk.
The data is clear that the more students we get enrolled in dual credit during the senior year, the more, that's a very high percentage of those students that
right.
come on to
right.
to any college university,
right.
and particularly to the college university with whom they are with whom they are enrolled in a dual credit program. Our enrollment management staff has done some pretty creative endeavors in this regard with some of the best high schools across Kentucky, with Fort Thomas Highlands, now Boyle County. We've been doing it for some time with Warren County Schools and Barron County Schools and others. You always got that pricing price point that's a little bit of a tension with some school districts. There are some school districts that are anxious to do it, but these students do have to pay for these courses in which they are enrolled, and that's something that's always a negotiation with the school district. But this is a growing phenomenon, and we've been pretty creative and selective, and it's pleasing when some of the best schools in the state school districts come to us for these kind. And some of them are even discipline specific, like Fort Thomas Highlands is particularly focused on the communications disciplines and the humanities and arts.
Oil County is looking to move in that direction also. But some of the classes they will be offering chemistry, college algebra, intro to education, and the majority of the students will be taking two or more classes. So taking three.
So explain to me what those teachers do to be able to teach dual credit. Do they?
They have had especially in their subject area. And the number of hours, it's 18 graduate hours in their specialty field.
So they're taught by someone, guidelines that the Western people are telling them on how to teach their class.
Correct, yes.
Do we have high schools in Jefferson County that participate at Western?
Not directly through.
That would be yes, we would like to do that, but this again, this is something that's just been evolved in the last year, a couple of years. So there are some schools that we would like to get into that, like Manual and others in Louisville.
Mail. The traditional schools.
In fact, Mail is one of our top 10 producing high schools. Of all the high schools across Kentucky, I think Mail is like number 8 or 7 or 8, 9, somewhere in that range of all the high schools in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. We get the preponderance of college-bound students from Mail.
It would be a great school. Good relationship to have.
Absolutely.
With them. And my other question is, do you do this with private schools, parochial schools as well?
We haven't been approached from that standpoint.
No prohibition, though, is there?
No.
Oh, okay.
The schools of Fort Thomas and Boyle County both came to us asking for the program, and a very unique program, as President Renzel said, from the standpoint of Fort Thomas. And that, I think that kind of spurred Boyle County.
Yeah. I'd just like to add as a postscript to that enrollment is a combination of two things. It's recruitment, admission of new students. It's also retention of the ones that are here. And this has become a priority item for me. Our current freshman, sophomore retention rate is running about 73-74%. That means over a quarter of our freshmen do not return for a second year, which is not perhaps the best use of their time, is to come to college for a year and then leave. And we will be putting a major emphasis in addressing this issue over the next few months. A task force has been formed. We will be having a dean's retreat to address this issue and to implement plan, not just to talk about it, but to say we're going to start doing this. We have identified key characteristics of students who are unlikely to be retained based on past history, and we will be providing colleges lists of these students so that appropriate intervention strategies, whatever that may be, can be applied. We'll be looking at best practices, and although it's a little bit early to be setting goals, I think a substantial, certainly finite number of percentage point improvement in that will help a great deal. Not only in our enrollment numbers, but also in fulfilling the mission of this institution. So.
This will be a major point of discussion at our retreat in July. We'll spend a good part of the Thursday session of our July board meeting on this matter, and by that time we'll have strategies that will not yet be policy and practice that we will discuss with the board at that time. And then our intent is to make those decisions then. And this will be the primary focus, beginning with our opening convocation in August going forward. Persistence, retention, completion, and the best strategies and practices to improve those numbers. And the numbers are huge. If we can just get from 75 to 80% freshman and sophomore retention that's several million dollars financially if that's your only driver, but that's the secondary value. The real value is doing the right thing, and once you accept them, we need to do all we can to see that they complete their degree program. And included in that will be a closer look at the selection criteria.
Over the last two or three years, we've tried to address this problem in the past. So have we made any improvement? Is that 75% lower than, better than, or the same as two or three years ago?
It's fluctuated by a plus or minus 1 percentage point, but I would say it's consistently like 73 plus or minus 1. It varies slightly, but there's no discernible trend over the last decade. We hope to change that.
But that's interesting, too. Mm-hmm. That is very interesting, given changing economic climate, changing enrollment patterns. Mm-hmm. It's a different university than it was 10 years ago, so that continuity strikes me as interesting, and a lot, actually.
And we're dealing with much larger numbers now.
Yeah. Right.
So the dynamics and variables are different. And we just started this class that entered this fall was first class where we began to adjust our directed and conditional admit practice and a little higher ACT minimum. So we don't have a lot of data yet, but since we began to put some different practices in place, but for the first time in my experience, we're really drilling down into the data. And we're really understanding what criteria has a low percentage of success record, what criteria related to students has a high success record, and we're going to make these decisions and practices are going to be made and shaped by data as opposed to hunch, and we're really capturing that data for the first time that I'm aware of.
I'd like to introduce Doug McElroy. Doug will in fact be leading this task force in conjunction with the enrollment management folks. Institutional research reports to Doug, and that's a key element of this initiative, as President Randall says, to do this on the basis of data and facts and proven results. So.
Well,
Doug more often.
I'm hoping that in the past, when we have relaxed our academic requirement and taken in students who were not capable of staying, that now that we're raising our academic standards, we should improve that and not have those kind of numbers of people who
we should. Students fail to be retained for a variety of reasons, only one of which is academic. There are social issues, financial issues, and we'll address all of these. But yeah, you're correct. In many ways, that will address part of the issue, simply looking at our admissions criteria more closely.
Well, and I'm glad to hear that raising the floor is on the table. I think that's great.
But like all things in enrollment management, it's part art and part science. And the data will help us take a analytical approach, but there are a few things that are absolute. And there's always going to be 16, 17, 18-year-olds that we need to take for different reasons, but we need to respect and address the analytical variable much more perhaps than we have historically.
Okay, now we can move on to Senate Bill number 130.
DPT development process?
Development process.
Okay, yep.
Yes.
Earlier, approved the new degree type. That's the first step in a significant process leading to the enrollment of the first cohort of students. And Dean John Barragoro from College of Health and Human Services is here to discuss how that process will develop. John?
Page 44 in your book, if you'd like to follow.
44, 45. Really excited to be at this point. It took a lot of people to get us here. The outline on the first two pages is our next step, what we plan to take. The critical thing right now is House Bill 130 passed. We have permission to report. We need to hire the talent to come here to develop the curriculum. campus with our equipment. So we're really kind of in this implementation phase on page 44. Is to hire a director and a coordinator of clinical experiences. Those searches are going on right now. We actually identified three candidates. We hope to have them here at the campus before the end of the semester to be the director of the physical therapy program. That person then will be very active in the search for the clinical coordinator, and those individuals will be in developing the curriculum. As according to the process and time frame, we'll get that, like to get that through within a 3-month process of, from August to January, go through the appropriate committees, develop the curriculum, and then begin to establish admission criteria, and the goal of accepting our first class of fall of 2012. So it's a very ambitious schedule, but it's one that we feel is realistic. We just need to have the talent here to do it, and we'll get our first class here by 2012. So I'm here to answer any questions you may have about the physical therapy program and what our plans are and steps, but it's pretty clear, clearly outlines what we need to do. And it's taken us a long time to get here, 4 to 5 years in planning. It's a very sound proposal. We have a lot of commitment, a lot of individuals helping us. We've already raised externally $650,000 to start this program. There's no cost, as was brought before. We'll just, if we have any startup costs, it's all going to be raised externally. In terms of the first year startup for faculty and our staff, and also for equipment. Our goal is to get to near $2 million, and we have plans to, with that, the number of individuals, and we thank Dr. Ransell's leadership to help us get to that point as well. But we really think this is an ambitious plan, but one that's realistic for us to do. So with that overview, does anyone have any questions I may answer about development of physical therapy.
I've communicated with the board to some degree about the discussions with the medical center and leasing space. I will keep you informed. Our next meetings are in May. As now that the PPT program is approved, we will resume discussions as we create space for this program and for our School of Nursing. And I'll keep you informed as those discussions unfold with the medical center's work in the TIF district. That will not be anything that we would own, but we would lease space from them and proceed with proper facilities for both this program and our School of Nursing.
Yes, Pat.
What's your target number to how many faculty do you want to have on board for fall 12? To roll out.
We probably will have a director of physical therapy, clinical coordinator, and probably two more faculty. We need to be hired by fall to set first class. Incrementally, we'll probably be hiring around two per year until we get fully staffed. We'll take between 6 and 8 faculty, full-time faculty, to deliver this program. Okay. We're shooting for, as Dr. Emsley mentioned, 30 students. 30 to 32, it's kind of varies based upon how the clinical experiences are designed. But we need to bring the talent here to really lay that out, how the curriculum would work. Mm-hmm. So,
are these faculty going to be tenure track or clinical track or a mixture?
It'll probably be a mixture.
Okay.
Be a mixture, yes.
Okay.
But the applicants we have now are very strong. We have three outstanding applicants. We're processing the form to put in the campus, and we're hoping to know by the end of the day that approval of that will bring them here. Hopefully, be here during that week of finals week, which we're really trying to get into the end of the semester, too, so they can still see
what it looks like when it's running.
Interaction. Correct. Yeah. I mean, it's important to do that. And then they need to transition, come start July, start August. But we're really moving that, and we're really pleased with the applicant pool.
Good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll move on to the next item.
Okay. This is one of the more distinctly pleasurable parts of the proceedings, I believe. If I read my WKU history, in 1930, this institution was authorized to award its first baccalaureate degrees. 1 year later, in 1931, it was authorized to award master's degrees. 80 years after that, we're finally going to be graduating our first cohort of EDD graduates at the commencement ceremony in May. We had a ceremony at the Nicely Center about a month ago where we put little pins recognizing candidacy of some 20 students, so that, you know, they're coming down the pipe. But I'd like Dean Sam Evans to introduce the WKU's very first five doctoral graduates who are sitting in the back row.
Thank you very much, Dr. Emslake. First thing I'd like to say is thank you to the Board of Regents for your support for this program and for Central Administration for everything that you have done. Right now we have 133 individuals within the program. And it is tremendous to think that we are basically 3 years into our work. The individuals that I have with me today are the first five who will graduate. We do anticipate 15 to 18 more in December, tremendous in terms of what has been accomplished. Two of the individuals who are with us today are public school personnel to work for WKU, and I think, Kelly, are you currently employed right now?
I work for them.
Okay. So, and on my far right, we've got Edwin Kraft, who is in the organizational leadership component of the program. Matthew Constance is in our P-12 school and district leadership. Kelly Davis is in the organizational leadership. Angela Gunter is in our teacher leadership. And John Baker is in our organizational leadership program. These folks have completed all the requirements for the degree, which will be awarded in May. They have done an outstanding job of answering all questions. And I indicated to them today that if there are any questions, I'll ask that they respond to them.
The last history of this university was written in 1986 by Lowell Harrison. When the next history is written, the five of you will be included in the history of this university as our first doctoral graduates. Congratulations.
Thank you very much, and thank you folks for the hard work you've done over the past year.
You bet.
He was our commander of our ROTC battalion.
Thank you all. And now we'll move on to the final item.
Final item is informational. We have, within the last couple of months, submitted our 50-year interim report to the Southern Association of Colleges and Schools, part of our ongoing effort to sustain accreditation. Dr. Sylvia Geico, who is here, spearheaded this effort. The report was produced in an amazingly efficient manner. It involved not only the contributions from all the colleges, but also an internal review by a small subcommittee. And there are 14 items that you have to address compliance, and also something called a quality enhancement plan, which addresses how the institution is sort of moving forward. And I'll let Sylvia briefly mention the findings from our report.
Well, I think if you look on page 48, I was very pleased, and if you can see where it's underlined, that our students really proceed and enhance academic compliance over the course of this community. And to me, that's just that volunteer for the students. If they perceive that, I know the faculty and administration on the students work very hard for that to happen, and that's what it's all about. But you can also see through the graphs on the bottom of that page, Doug McElroy can answer questions probably better on the computer than I can. He's really spearheaded that, but it's nice to see a graph when the score is constantly going up, and that's what we see here. The students understand their major and society, they apply their learning experiences, they're aware of responsibilities as a citizen. All again, what's related to our quality enhancement program, our mission as an institution, and our students' development to be professionals in the future. the last chart. I always leave that to my boss.
I get to brag. Thanks, Sylvia. One of the items that the SACS report asks us to address is the success of our graduates, whether they are moving on to employment, whether they are successful in professional licensure exams, and so forth. And as a former graduate dean, it struck me that one measure of success is how many of our graduates go on to earn doctoral degrees, albeit at other institutions. And that's a number that's actually relatively easy to obtain. The NSF does a survey of earned doctorates in every decade, and one of the questions they ask doctoral recipients is, where did you earn your bachelor's degree? So you can actually search quite readily through the data and determine that 307 students who earned baccalaureate degrees from WKU went on to earn a doctoral degree somewhere during the 2000 to 2009 time frame. That ranks 260-something in the world. But I think more interestingly, if I compare to the other 725 Carnegie master's level institutions in the U.S., WKU ranks 28th out of 700 and something in terms of our number of baccalaureate recipients that go on to earn doctoral degrees. We are clearly well preparing students for advanced study. If we look at our master's graduates, it gets even better. Of all 564, I believe it is, institutions that graduated a certain number of students that went on to earn doctoral degrees, WKU ranks 22nd in that list. What's not in your chart is if we were classified as research doctoral, as in due course we may, as we add doctoral programs, we would rank 6th. In that list, in terms of the number of our students that go on to earn doctoral degrees somewhere. And we're very proud of this. And with that, I would like to close my report.
Those are very impressive statistics that speak well to the quality of our academic experience and to the degree to which our faculty are preparing students for graduate study. Very, very, very impressive numbers. Most people should be surprised pleasantly by that data, because that is not something that people have historically measured or had the reason to view us in this light, and it's impressive.
I agree.
What is this? I don't understand this top 5% of our Carnegie institutions. What does that mean?
That would be the 564 institutions classified as high-level masters, which means we are a strong masters-granting institution, but we're not yet classified as a doctoral-granting institution until we get a certain number of doctoral programs. So of our peer institutions, if you like, in terms of their mission, the type of degrees that comprise the institution, I think the number is 564, and we're 22nd on that list in terms of students who go on to earn doctorate.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. About 5%.
How many doctorate degrees do you have to be rated higher?
To be rated on this list, you had to, I believe, for the top number, this NSF, top number it was 10 over the 10-year period, so at least one a year. If your institution did not produce at least 10 students that earned doctoral degrees in that period, you were not included. I believe for the second list, for the master's one, it was 5. And Doug?
I think that's right.
Yeah.
By 2015, when the first DPT class is scheduled to graduate, and by that time our DNP cohorts will be graduating from the Doctor of Nursing Practice, and the EDD, the five individuals you just met, will be at full production. We will be graduating over 100 doctoral students a year with those three programs, 30 from the DPT, yet to be determined, but it could be as many as 40 or 50 from the DNP, and we should be graduating 20 to 25, maybe 30 out of Sam's not here, but from the EDD program as well by that time.
So that is an entirely different context for us as an institution. And again, the numbers are good to measure, and they're important that we measure them. But the value is putting our students with the terminal degrees and, in the case of practice-based doctorates, the licensure variable in place for them to perform within their profession with the required credentials. And in the case of the DNP and the DPT, the entry-level credential for licensure in that discipline. That's what we mean when we say practice-based doctorates, as opposed to PhDs. So this is a very important set of data that we are now beginning to measure. And when we talk about institutional transformation, which we've talked a lot about over the last 13 or 14 years, and we'll continue to do so in our strategic planning process going forward. This is a fundamental institutional, a measure of institutional transformation, as most any we will experience. And this is a fundamental transformational change for this university.
And strongly coupled to growth and research. At the same time.
Well, I mean, and the two, one two paves way for the other.
I understand that Center College is the only university that has Phi Beta Kappa. Do we have any prospect?
Gordon and I have talked about that. Okay, that was on the list when Gordon interviewed.
It was? It's still on my list.
Can you achieve that?
Yeah, it's a three-year cycle process, and okay. I hope to enter that fairly soon. The first step is to learn from others. I intend to visit some folks who've recently achieved Phi Beta Kappa and to find out what the steps are. But clearly with an honors college and so forth, we're on track eventually.
Again, the honors college puts us in a much better position, and that's a long and rigorous process. Institutions often take decades to earn that distinction. But the honors college is the core means through which, because let's face it, the Honors College is the same size as Transylvania and Center College, 1,200 students, and though that's where the qualitative measures will be assessed in that process. But that's something that's is on our strategic vision in our strategic vision.
And don't just limit yourself as you pursue this, which we absolutely should, but there are actually a lot of stars outside that, too, that would absolutely help further the goal of getting a Phi Beta Kappa chapter here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it's a broad set of measures.
A lot of bright students who don't do that, but would still help us.
If there's nothing further, thank you, Dr. Emsley, and all those who provided information. And we'll turn it back over now to... Chairman Meyer.
Thank you, Yvette.